Sassy Jack Stitcher is happy to be a sponsor of Fiber Talk. We so appreciate all the heart that Gary and team put into their show, and we always look forward to each episode. Thank you, Fiber Talk, for all you do for our needlework world. Sassy Jack's is a vibrant needlework shop located in the mountains of western North Carolina, just north of Asheville. We're in the process of moving our shop to its forever home in a historic Folk Victorian on the National Listing of Historic Places, just 3 miles down the road from our current location. While we're moving, you can find us in all our normal online haunts, our website at sassyjackstitchery.com, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We can't wait to open our doors and welcome you into our new old home. It was always a plan to be in this beautiful old house, and we've invested a huge chunk of our hearts into its renovation. Every renovated board, every push-button light switch, every old porch swing has lovingly, mostly, been placed there with our own hands. It has a wonderful, warm, welcoming feel about the place already, and your stitchy joy and laughter with friends will really make it home for Sassy Jack's. So look for us online for the next few months, as we'll be filling online and phone orders as per usual, and we'll be looking forward to the spring at the Baird House in Asheville, North Carolina. When the time comes, we'll leave the light on for you, just like your mom did when you were a kid, so you'll know it's time to come home. Now on to the show.
Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
You're listening to the Fiber Talk podcast that we do twice a week for needlework artists. Our artist this week, Cindy Lee Gershon. Yes, that's Cindy from 2 weeks ago who talked about what a judge does and then did a Wednesday show about judging and showed some pictures. And if you missed any of that, you want to go back at WeTalkFiber.com, look up Cindy Gershon, G-E-R-S-H-I-N, and you can see all of that. Well, the other part of Cindy, she has two halves. The other half is she is a needlework appraiser. And we talked too much about judging the last time and couldn't get to the appraisal part. So Cindy is returning this week to tell us about needlework appraisal. And I'm sure anybody who's done particularly needlework antique samplers, but really, any kind of needlework at a level, you start to wonder, does this stuff have value? Should I protect it? What should I do? So, Cindy, welcome back. It's good to have you.
Hi. Thank you for having me back again.
Yes. This, you know, that was the thing with you is, all right, we want to hear about the judging, but I almost equally wanted to hear about the appraisal, so appreciate you doing this so quickly afterwards.
I had wanted to talk about the appraisal as well, so I'm glad you asked me to come back so we could focus on that this time.
Now, it seems to me that if you look at it in the right way, of course, if you look at anything in the right way, they kind of tie together, but that appraisal and judging really have a lot of similarities. Is that, was one a branch off of the other or equal interest, or how did you get involved in appraisal too?
Oh, I believe it was just more of continuing interest. I had done the Master Craftsman program through EGA. I had done the judging program through EGA, as you know, that we spoke about. And then I really wanted to do something more and take it in a slightly different direction. So I became interested in working on appraisals, specializing in needlework. So it was just, I think, a continuation of my love of needlework. I had started collecting antique pieces of antique samplers, some antique tools since I had become a judge. So I think my interest had expanded into other areas, and becoming an appraiser was for me the next step.
So your appraisal extends beyond needlework then? You've done appraisals, other antique tools, that kind of thing?
No, I collect antique tools, but my needlework designation is specifically in needle art appraisal. So anything done with a threaded needle.
Okay, so for now you stick to that. Okay, we'll check back in a couple of years.
Yes, we'll see.
Yeah, okay, I've seen that movie, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we know how that goes.
Yep.
Cindy the sequel.
All right, so we could, if we look at needlework, you can immediately see with reproduction samplers, especially if you buy the antiques, a need to appraise and protect. But for the everyday needlework person, where does appraisal come in? What interest should they have? What role should that play? I'm talking about people, not people who have just done a few things that they hang on the wall, but who have some history, have some finished some things that they've invested a lot in. At what point does appraisal become part of the package, and where do you fit into it?
I think one of the big needs for a quote-unquote regular person is when you have a number of things and you get to the point that you're looking at them and saying, you know, if something ever happens to these, if something happens to the home or where they're stored and they get damaged or someone comes in and does vandalism, maybe these should be insured. And if you have enough pieces to do them as a collection of work, which is how I would phrase it, as a collection, it might be worth speaking to your insurance provider to ask what your personal property coverage is on your regular policy and to see if it would be wise to add an addition to the policy. In my case, it would be like a personal property coverage extension specializing perhaps in art or textiles. Usually there's a cap on your homeowner's insurance. Yeah. The other reason individuals contact me fairly often is if they're looking to donate work for tax deductions and whatnot. Sometimes if you have a certain financial limit that you're hoping to get and use on your tax returns, they require you to have a professional appraisal done by someone as an expert in that profession. So okay. I get called upon an awful lot to do that. Or if someone unfortunately has passed away and the family is trying to place a value either on the collection of pieces they have, or they're looking to donate them, or to find out, is there enough value in these pieces to perhaps sell them? And that's true in both contemporary work that we all currently do and antique and vintage pieces as well.
And I don't want to get bogged down in insurance, because we could just talk ourselves right to sleep with insurance. But obviously that is a factor, particularly as a homeowner. Is it generally a special rider that you put on your homeowner insurance, or do you then look for someone who will insure needlework or insure art, I assume, as a greater category?
That's an excellent question. And on that, I would actually defer that to people asking their own insurance provider, because some carry certain types of coverages that others don't, and others may refer you someplace for a particular type of policy that perhaps they don't offer. So I think that's just somebody reaching out to their own policy provider. We also do, by the way, along with that, just before we end on insurance, heaven forbid someone's had a fire or a flood, or there's been a hurricane and there's damage in their home, we can do appraisals after the fact. We call them retro appraisals, retroactive. And the key to that is if you have records of by photographs, so you can show us what you have that proves that you had them prior to the incident, we can backtrack and place a value on anything based on the date, right before it was damaged. So if you need to figure values to replace items for any reason, we can also work with you on that.
If like a needlework guild is having a show, do they need to have those pieces appraised?
That's an interesting question. Some shows will ask you to provide an estimated value of insurance, so they can provide it. I guess they have a rider on certain shows. Some shows have done it, some that I've worked with, some shows haven't. There are ways to come up yourself with just a very quick down and dirty appraisal value to sort of use for that, which will cover your basis for the show that you're entering. However, that's really not the true appraisal if you used the value you came up with by calculating the cost of your materials and a basic estimate of your number of hours times the cost of minimum wage in your state. You can use that for a quick coverage estimate. However, if you hired a professional appraiser to do a correct appraisal, regardless of whether it was for sales or insurance or donation value. Every type of appraisal, even for the same piece, can come up with a different valuation of appraisal. Mm-hmm. And they will not be that number that you come up with yourself by just putting your labor and materials costs together. There's a lot more to it. And I think that confuses people when they reach out saying, hi, I have these particular things. I would like to get the cost of having an appraisal done for this particular reason. And then we come back at people with, okay, well, in order to do this job, it's going to take me this much time and my estimate will be approximately this many hours, which will cost you in this price range. And it's usually quite expensive because unlike, say, a jewelry appraisal, for an example, where it, you know, maybe takes an hour or less and there's some certain set standards that they use, we have to do a lot of research. Every piece is unique. Most things cannot be reproduced easily at a low cost. So there's a lot of research and work that we do in a needle art appraisal.
Okay, so that, yeah, and your response about insurance companies didn't surprise me because, yeah, I'm sure you need to ask a lot of questions, do some shopping, and do some evaluation. But a top of mind these days is all the people in the Northwest of the United States mm-hmm. who are dealing with these wildfires. And, you know, you have to abandon, and obviously you can only take as much as you can get in the car, and you have to make some choices. And I got a feeling that needlework stash and needlework hanging on walls just has to get left behind.
Depends on your priorities.
Well,
where I live in Southern California, I'm in Santa Clarita, and we generally have several fires. We've had several large ones. We have been told to mandatory evacuate our homes in the we've lived here almost 19 years in this particular home, and we've had three evacuations that we've had to leave the house. And we load up the cars, we take the big dog, and I have two big bird carriers, and then we have a bunch of stuff that's important to my husband's work that we have to take with us that's of value and not replaceable. I currently have some of my antique samplers boxed up in the front room so that if we have to evacuate, they're boxed up and ready to go, you know. And then, my son has to go too. if you know you're in an area and you know something's coming, you have time. But a lot of times, you know, there's a hurricane or in parts of the country where we unfortunately have flooding or tornadoes, a fire, either you can sort of know it's coming, or I have a canyon right behind me. And if that canyon goes up, we will have literally minutes to grab our cell phones and the animals and ourselves and get out the door, and that's it.
Right.
So,
well, and you
have a plan.
This topic gets to be more and more important just because of all those things. And we know with global warming, it's only going to get worse. Mm-hmm. And we have some friends who owned a place in a canyon, it sounds like, just like that. And the fire department said, just be aware that if a fire starts, it will funnel right down the canyon to your house. So you need to be able to run. And, they sold the house not too many years after that because they just didn't like that black cloud hanging over them. So you get to a point where, like you said, you have your stuff boxed up, ready to go. And I'm sure that is becoming a way of life for more and more people who live in these areas, whether it's hurricanes or fires. So then an evaluation of an appraisal then starts to have more importance than maybe it would in, say, the Midwest, because if you have to leave them behind to an insurance company, it's probably, you know, to them, just women sewing. You know, what's that?
Right. Very true.
The cost of a spool of thread is 50 cents. So there's your insurance. Mm-hmm. So that then starts to carry some weight.
Yeah. And I recommend, look into someone like me. If you have enough things that you feel you may want to have them insured, I'm always willing to talk to you. It doesn't cost anything to contact me to discuss it. The other thing I recommend, if perhaps someone is not quite ready or doesn't feel they want to take this step and have an appraisal done, make sure you have relatively up-to-date pictures of everything. So if something unforeseen does occur, at least you have a photographic backup. And should you wish to try and get a retroactive appraisal done, then at least you have proof that you had these things. We can see exactly what they were and what you had, and we can work estimates with that in accordance with your insurance company.
Okay, so let's start then at the beginning. So I'm assuming that if you collect antique samplers and have any number of them, that you're going to be making sure that those are protected and covered because of the investment that's involved. So that, to me, that gets set aside. But let's look at the people who have been stitching for a long time, have a number of things on the wall, have invested quite a bit, whether it be painted canvas, antique samplers, whatever it might be, have several things on the wall, all custom framed, you know, all the things mm-hmm. that go with it. What are my procedures? Obviously, you need photos to protect. That's item
photos.
One.
Photos. Mm-hmm, sure. If you have receipts are always great because that proves what you have when it was purchased and what the costs are. If not, sort of general estimated lists of what the materials were that went into it. You know, we can work a lot of estimates. Being needle workers ourselves, the needle art appraisers that I have trained and worked with, we can look at a picture of something that's got to be a very good clear picture. And we can also make some estimates if we don't have a lot of information. I think one of the biggest things, while I love to have receipts because that makes my job easier and it saves money because it helps with the research and the calculations, it gives me a jumping off point. Really good photos of everything are really the key, because the photos, especially if you take them with a phone or a tablet, they're time stamped and dated. So you have proof that you had these things, and we can see them, and we can see what condition that they were in. So assuming that most of us have things kept in relatively pristine condition, as far as our own work that we've created, then, you know, there's proof. There's proof for the insurance company. There's proof for us to write an appraisal to help you, you know, and so on.
There's several. Gary mentioned one last Wednesday where you can put your photos of your projects. Would that be helpful if you had one of those, what would they be called? Like, it's like a filing system, like a big Excel spreadsheet. Would that be helpful for insurance then, or for an appraiser?
If the key to me is that photo to see exactly what it is. You know, it might be, it's also just a really good system for your own personal bookkeeping to know exactly what you've had in the house. I have two or three tubs of things that are, you know, small projects that I've done in all the years that I've been a needle worker. They're, you know, guild projects, they're workshops, they're a lot of things that I don't necessarily keep out because they were learning things, but they came out nice and they sat out for a while and now they've rotated into the box because newer things are out. But I have photos of everything, which I really should organize as I give the advice to everyone else, because if something happens, I will be digging through. I constantly take photos. I've always loved photography, but I will have to go through thousands and thousands of photos to find pictures of everything I need. So it's always a good idea to perhaps have a single source where you file, you know, electronically, and perhaps up to the cloud. So if something happens again, it's easy to get to, and you don't have to worry about it in the middle of a disaster. You have your photo, you have your name of the chart, if there is one, or the name of the sampler or piece of needlework. You perhaps have a little information of the date you got it, maybe what you paid for it, or a very light description of, you know, done on canvas with Rainbow Gallery and some Krynek Metallic. If you should need to have an appraisal done, the more information you can provide to your appraiser, the easier it is and the better work we can do for you.
And a key thing there is to have that data backed up. You know,
yes.
So you gotta back it up. And a backup is not a drive connected to your laptop sitting on your desk. That's not a backup. Mm-hmm. It's a backup is something that is outside of your house in another system. Because if the house burns up and your laptop goes and the backup drive goes, Yeah, there you are. So
yeah. My worst case scenario is when we had fires here. It was, I think, 2 years ago. It was in October, right before COVID took hold. We were in Boston doing some work, and my whole family and I were there and visiting some relatives. And there was a fire right in this area, and people were here at the house watching it for us. But and I was sitting on the East Coast going, oh my gosh, if it seems like it's going to get closer, you know, the cars are both home, my car keys are out where you can use them, load up the SUV, load up the other SUV, this is what you need to take, you know, but I wasn't home.
Yeah.
You know, so really, who knew? And if it was really bad, they would take off, whereas we would probably get a few more things in the car. So you have to figure, if something happens and you're not home, or you're at work and they won't let you back to your house, which happens if you leave the neighborhood to take things to an offsite, to a friend's house, the fire department and police sometimes won't let you back in your neighborhood in a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just, you know, that's a whole other topic. I could talk for an hour on that as well, but different personal experience. But yeah, so photos and information, cloud backup. The more you have, the better off it is for everything.
Yeah, and you know, I'm sure that the reaction to some people is, oh, what a hassle to do that. But if you think about it, you're taking pictures and posting them in social media throughout the project.
Right.
It's really not a stretch. You put up the final photo, say, look how I finished it, how beautiful it is. It just got framed. Here it is. Save those photos somewhere and you know, keep track of them. It's not that big of a thing.
Exactly. Yeah, just make like a folder that you just put that and the information in, an electronic folder that you just make a habit of when you complete something, a picture and information goes right into that folder.
Okay, so that's the foundation. That's the prep work. Now, I want an appraisal. So I contact you.
Mm-hmm.
Take us through that process.
Sure. The first thing I will ask for is a picture of your piece.
There we go.
Surprise. Yep. And I'll ask for approximate dimensions. If it's a piece that someone has done or a family member has done, you know, a more contemporary piece, I'll ask for any information they have about it that they could share with me. If it's an antique or a collected piece, perhaps where did they get it? Who acquired it? How long have they had it? Sometimes someone has bought something off an estate sale. They know nothing about it. So a lot of what I do is identify the piece, and if the person is not a needle worker, I help them figure out if it's a needle point, if it's a cross stitch, if it's a vintage piece, if it's an older piece, and that I'm always willing to do before we even start an appraisal process. And then at that point, I sort of run an estimate in my head as to how long it will take me to do an appraisal on that particular piece. I do need to know from my potential client what the purpose of the appraisal is. Are they looking for the value to sell it, to appraise it, perhaps to donate it? Because as I mentioned earlier, every one of those purposes can have a different value, and they can be researched a little bit differently as well. Once I have an estimate of my time, I let the client know, okay, I think to do this job, it's going to take from about this many hours to this many hours. Here is my hourly rate. So this is sort of what we're looking at. If you're interested, let's go ahead and I'll write up some paperwork and we'll have a contract and we'll move forward. And then you'll need to give me information, you know, the exact measurements and more pictures, more detailed pictures so I can see it. Ideally, we like to have pieces sent to us to see in person. Some pieces are much too large. Some pieces are much too delicate. With COVID, I've sort of put a little bit of a squash on bringing too many things in the house that have had to be shipped. Also, because our mail system and package delivery systems have been so overloaded, I don't want to take a chance of anything getting lost in transit to me or returning to my client. And then we kind of go from there and it starts the job. The one important thing to know when you are speaking with an appraiser for a potential job, if the appraiser says to you, I estimate your piece may cost this amount of money and my percentage of that is, you know, I take, you know, 20% or something, that's not ethical. We don't do that. If someone is asking to be paid based on the amount that they value your work at, don't use that person. That's not the way a proper appraisal is done. You should have an estimate, an hourly or a flat fee or however that appraiser works, but you should have the estimate for the appraisal job work up front prior to the person accepting and doing the job on the appraisal, because the appraisal work should not be based on the value. It is a job. It's based on the amount of our labor and not the amount of, you know, the value of your piece.
So suggesting that if it's a percentage, then that price might get inflated a bit. Just to, yeah, okay.
Right. So if a piece values at, say, you know, $5,000 or $500 versus $50,000, if it takes you, say, 10 hours to do the appraisal, every one of those jobs, regardless of what your final value estimate is, every one of those jobs should actually cost the same amount to your client for your appraisal work.
Mm-hmm.
Your bill to them for your services should be the same, regardless of the outcome of the value.
Now, is this like a doctor or home remodeling where you should get a second opinion, or are they all going to be pretty much in the ballgame?
You can get a second opinion. There's no harm in that. We all sort of set our own rates. So, you know, I may charge one thing. One of the other appraisers I know may charge the same or more or less. It just depends on who you're speaking to, what the job is, what our rate is for that. You know, are they a master appraiser like I am and like one of our other appraisers from ANG are? Are they actually, she's also a senior appraiser as well. And are they, you know, are they in the a regular needle art appraiser? Also try to find someone that you're looking for that does know needle arts, not just a regular textile appraiser, because a regular textile appraiser may or may not have experience with the handmade needlework. I occasionally consult with an appraiser that is a textile, and I believe she may specialize more sort of in clothing. And every once in a while, she'll come across something, whether it's a tapestry or another needlework piece or a collection, and she'll call me in and hire me as a consultant to help her understand some of the calculations and some of the nuances as to what we look for and how we value things. And she'll hire me to work with her on those.
Is there a list somewhere? Is there a master list, ANG, EGA, that people can go to, or
to find an appraiser?
Yeah.
ANG has a list. We're all on there. We're my happy group, and I'm former chairman of that program. So those are my girls as well as everyone else's. EGA has a list of appraisers as well, certified appraisers. You can also go and look online. There are several appraiser associations, and you can look online for those, and they will give you lists of people. And you do have to sort of look through those, because there's not a huge amount of needlework specific appraisers. So if that's what you're looking for, I would suggest looking at ANG and EGA first, and then looking at the National Appraisal Associations as well, and see what you can find. But we, through ANG and EGA, are specifically trained to appraise the kind of work that we are talking about on your podcast.
Yeah. And I assumed it was a pretty small club of people that do what you do.
It's not a huge club, but we have enough people that it keeps us busy, you know, and it's not a type of profession that, you know, is self-sustaining at this point. It's sort of some extra work to take. That's why I do the appraisal and I do the judging, and as well as some other things. You have to really enjoy it and love it, because it is very research-based. If you're not willing to learn and read and do research, regardless of whether it's a contemporary piece or an antique, you have to be willing to get in and do all that research and compile it and run numbers and things.
Yeah. Now, all right. I'm sure that it all depends. You know, I'm sure the answer is it depends. But take us through the basic steps that you go through in appraising a piece, the research. You know, what are the things that you do, given that you're given basic information from the owner?
Okay. if it is a piece that is, say, a current piece that we've stitched ourselves, after inspecting either the piece in person or getting some very clear close-ups so that I can see the condition and the actual stitching, I will compile my inspection report, which is that information, the photos, the measurements of the piece. Is it framed? Is it hangable? How is it finished? And then I will start looking into what type of appraisal it is, as to whether it's something I'm going to look for a reproduction value, that if something happened to it, can we have someone reproduce it and remake it? What would that cost for another artist to make it? Or is it something that it can be purchased outright, which usually it's not, but we do have to go through that thought process. Is that something I can simply go somewhere that someone is selling, and can I purchase that to replace it? And then we start running values depending on the type of appraisal it is. So if it was the appraisal that I mentioned first, a reproduction appraisal, we would start looking at what it was made of, what the materials are, estimating quantities of materials. Is the chart available? Does it need to be redesigned and recharted? You know, are there any finishing costs involved related to it? And then we have to look at those costs at multiple sources. We can't just choose one shop or one resource and get the price. We have to pull in several resources so that we have an average price, because sometimes we can get estimates, say for some DMC cotton, even though that's relatively low cost. Yeah. But if you look at five different places for DMC cotton, it can be five different prices. And out of those five different prices, one of them can be very high, so we sort of cast that one off, that it's way higher than everybody else. One can be excessively low, same thing, and then we average out the others that are either the same price or very close in price. And we do that with all of our materials. And then we would run some labor estimates. How long do we think it would take to reproduce and restitch the piece? I have some resources where I have some, you know, people that stitch that for hire. So we can get some estimates. What do you charge per stitch? What do you charge per hour? What do you do with simple cross stitches or say basket weaver tent versus specialty stitches? So we then would look at the labor cost and fold that into it. And again, also getting multiple estimates, and pretty much add all that together and with all the variations, and try to come up with a price or a range of what it would cost to replace that piece. With something such as an antique sampler or an antique needlepoint piece, in that case, we get all the same inspection information of photos and measurements and framing or finishing and whatnot. And at that point, then our research takes us into acquiring a comparative piece. So we do comparative research, and I have a number of sites that I go and access that show me, and it's a lot of research to find things sometimes that are similar, that'll show me at auctions or at shops that sell that type of work, what have those things sold for, or what are they being offered for sale for? Is there a market for them? Are there a lot of them in the market that are just sitting and not selling? What is the condition of the piece is another really big one if you're working with antiques, because condition really affects the value. If it's a sampler, is it perhaps related to a specific school of needlework or a teacher or a location that adds additional value to it, versus something that is sort of a one-off, but is it a unique one-off, or is it a, you know, sort of, oh yes, this very fits very nicely into, say, Scottish samplers of the mid 1800s. And oh, look at the motifs and the colors, and nothing particular about it that makes it jump out. The person that did it, perhaps there's not a big provenance to it that relates it to someone important that gives it more value. So there's all these different nuances and even more that come into researching and figuring out what it is, and then figuring out what the value is. And then you have your estimated value for that category of work. And then you have to look at your particular piece that you're working with and adjust that value to the actual piece that you have to put a value on. So again, that's where condition and availability and whatnot come into play, adjusting the values. It's a lot of research.
Yeah.
It sounds like
a lot of research.
You mentioned provenance. So if it had an, you have to research that then too, when you're researching it.
Yes. As much as we can, a lot of the times, I don't do a lot of genealogy research. It's something that at some point I might look a little more into, but I do let my clients know up front that I will do some basic research. But if it comes up that there's a lot to this and it needs to be really dealt with separately, you know, I have other people that can do that if the client would like to have that done. It's a sort of a separate negotiation. Much of the time, the things that I get, I don't really see any connection to other, to anything terribly important. However, I will say one piece that I did appraise was, I found it in the attic when we bought this house off an estate piece. And, when I researched the piece, I just got lucky and found a lot of information online. Sometimes things fall together very nicely. And through the course of a number of hours of research, I was able to find documentation of not only the young lady that stitched it, and it was a genealogy sampler, so it had a nice list of her parents' names with dates, the marriage date, and all the siblings and date of birth and a few date of death. So I had a lot of nice information to work with on it. And it turned out that I believe it was her youngest brother had become... I think he was in the law profession, and the sampler was from the East Coast, and he had ended up in the Northwest. And there are actually towns and buildings and streets and things named after this person. And I was able to date the family back to, it was either 1601 or 1603, to the person that actually came across from, I believe it was somewhere in England, into the East Coast, and I was able to see the documentation of all of the family all the way up through, I think it went into the early 1900s. I think it went into the very early 1900s, and I got really lucky, and it was an absolutely fascinating research. And I have to admit, I spent many, many more hours on that than I charged, and I didn't charge the client for it. I found it absolutely fascinating, so I did extra work on it because I wanted to. I told her I had the work. She, you know, I didn't necessarily give her 100% of the details, but because they weren't paid for. But I did give her enough of that information that she could, you know, look into it and find it. But it was absolutely fascinating, and it was really one of those pieces that just jumped and said, "Hey, I'm special."
Yeah,
so that was fun.
Those hours get billed under fun.
Fun and research and just, you know, information, and, you know, it's like a puzzle, you know. Well, what if I look up this person's name? What if I look up that? Oh my gosh, well, he went from this city and he went to school, you know, in this city, and oh my gosh, where did he got married? And oh, look at this is, he ended up here, and oh, wait a minute, what, that place has the same name, let's look at that. And, you know,
well,
you don't
great.
Find that too often. But that was fun. Yeah, that was great. That was one of my favorite ones. And it was a sampler, and samplers are my favorite things to appraise.
Yeah, I'm sure. Now, the thing I'm taking out of all this, and it's a comfort and a good thing, is that this whole process is not Cindy sitting in her appraiser throne just passing judgment on pieces. All of this is based on research and reality. And everything can be traced back to something concrete. Yeah.
Yeah, because if something happens and say it is insured, we have, or say it's a large piece or a collection of pieces that are being donated somewhere, and we've done an appraisal for tens of thousands of dollars for whether it was the quantity of the pieces or who the person was that owned them, we have to legally be able to back it up with information should we get called out on it by the insurance company, by an IRS appraiser if it's a donation. I have to keep, when we do an appraisal, all that information that I'm talking about, we keep it in a work file, and we legally have to keep our work file for it's like 5 to 7 years, so that if we need to refer back to it, all of the research we've done, whether or not the details of it go into the report or they we went down a rabbit hole, but it wasn't the right one, but we still kept the information because it was part of our research, but it didn't need to go into the report, you know, because ultimately it wasn't needed. We have to keep those records so that we can we could in theory go up in a court of law and say to the judge, here is, you know, here is how I identified the piece. Here is how I researched the piece. Here is why I came up with these values. Here is why I adjusted those estimated values based on this particular piece. So we have to be able to back it up. We can't just pull a number out going, oh, I've appraised, you know, 5 of these in the last 3 years, and they usually run around $6,000. And oh, let's just throw $6,000. Oh, it's going to damage. Well, let's make it, you know, $5,000. No, there are very specific parameters that we have to look for and identify.
Yeah, see, that's okay. That's the part I was taken out of this. So that's where your certified appraiser comes in, as opposed to someone who just thinks they know.
Yes. Mm-hmm, exactly. That's what you get instead of the, you know, the person says, well, I can do a quick $25 appraisal and, you know, let you know how much it's worth. Well, I can give anyone a ballpark, theoretically. I can look at something and go, yeah, those usually go for, you know, it's a piece of work that someone has done themselves. Okay, yeah, that would usually go maybe for $800 to $2,500, you know, somewhere in that range, maybe narrow it down here or there. But ethically, I can't, because without actually sitting with it and analyzing it and researching it, you know, I can't really give someone a ballpark estimate, because it's not a true valuation of the piece.
Yeah. The other question that comes to mind is, we'll use Beth as an example. All right. She's poured hours and hours into a sampler, you know, and done a beautiful job, which of course we know she would do. Has it finished? And then, you know, what is the value? Well, you know what you spent on it. You bought, you know, a $75 piece of linen, and you bought some silks, and you got roughly X hours into it. Is there, and I know it depends, but should someone be able to look at their piece and say, all right, I spent $200 on this, and it's, when it's all finished and framed, maybe I have $500 into it. Do I have an $800 piece in value? I mean, is there some, extra value that comes with it just because it's been stitched and finished, or do people tend to have an inflated view of what of the value of their work?
Unfortunately, it's the latter. And what happens is a couple different things. First of all, it's sentimental value and attachment, because we all feel, and I speak as a needleworker as well, we all feel our pieces have had our heart and sweat and blood put into them sometimes, and we all feel that they should be worth much more than we could sell them for. So when you're looking at a piece that you did or Beth did or that I did, and I want to take and sell, you know, we want to get a value to insurance, or we want, a lot of times I have people, they're looking to make money. I did this really nice piece and I want to see what it's worth to sell it. Well, that means I have to look at the current market to see if there is a resale market for these pieces and what are they selling for. And sadly, this is where craft and art clash. Because, if you go to look online, like say, look on Amazon, not Amazon, eBay, and you look at all these people trying to sell work, or they have their mom's work or their grandmother's work, and it's from, say, the 1960s or 1970s, $35, you know, $20, anything to get it out of the house before sending it to Goodwill. Unfortunately, there's not a huge resale market. You know, if you're doing something, a stitch to hire, that's a whole separate negotiation. You know, that's really not an appraisal thing, but that's a whole separate negotiation where the stitcher would obviously make more money, because they would contract with their client and say, okay, it's going to cost you this much to have me do it. But to have it appraised, unfortunately, we don't recognize, well, the world, we recognize, the world does not recognize our work as having that kind of value. That's why I said sometimes if you're entering a show and it asks you to please provide the estimated value of your piece, and I said you can take your materials and your hours and the cost of minimum wage and run up an estimate,
right?
That's where we get into trouble. It's like the I realize not everyone has seen this picture, but the Hardanger piece that I've shown in our first podcast regarding the judging, that piece I estimated when I stitched it based on the number of hours that went into it. I probably had, when I entered it in the show, I probably had it estimated for maybe $3,000 or $4,000 based on that calculation. But if I actually went to appraise it now to resell it, I mean, maybe a couple hundred dollars if someone was willing to pay for it. I mean, go online. And again, if you look at eBay, is not where I do my research. I sometimes do just for informational purposes to look for images that are similar to things. But, you know, if you go on eBay and look at, say, you know, whether it's antique, some of the antique samplers they list are outrageously priced, but whether it's some antique samplers or look at contemporary stuff, look at stuff like older needlework pictures, look at some things that are similar to what we do, or even look at like some tablecloths, like lace tablecloths or stamped tablecloths, and you'll see people are really just trying to get rid of them any way they can. And it's very sad. It's very sad. I have a lot of people that contact me that, oh, I've got mom's work and mom was in her 80s and or 90s and she stitched all her life and look at these pieces and mom did beautiful work. You know, and I may get hired to get a value for estate purposes, which is a little better value. But if they're looking to have a value to sell it, a lot of times we actually start talking about, can you donate it somewhere? And you know, and if you have a number of pieces to hire me to run up a value for donation purposes, having multiple pieces is sometimes worth doing it. But yeah, it's very sad. Our work does not doesn't get the value it should. It really doesn't.
Yeah, well, and I think that's an important topic, which is why I brought it up, but an important topic to consider, because we do. We put all our energy into that thing, and to us it has enormous value, but there's that wall of perspective with the real world's on the other side, and to most of them it's just women's work, and it isn't even art. It just doesn't carry value, yeah.
Exactly. And it's really hard to explain that to a client, especially if they have a family piece. I know also some of the people that I work with, the other appraisers, you know, we all talk constantly, and it's really difficult when we get contacted by a client and they say, I have this piece. It belonged to my grandmother, but it, you know, it's not like an antique, like we would be discussing antiques here, but I have this older piece and my grandma did it. And it's a large needle point, and the museum appraised it about 30 years ago, and they came up with a $30,000 value. And I'm like, oh, wow, I can't wait to see this. This is fantastic. Okay, let me take a look. Thank you for sharing. I still have to do my own research on it, you know, from scratch, but great, let me see. So they'll send me the images, and this is before we contract for a job. This is some of the preliminary work that I do. And I'll take a look at it and go, all right, maybe I'm missing something. The condition isn't very good, so that could have changed, but I don't see anything jumping out to me that is totally special about it. And I'll start asking some more questions. Well, do you know what museum appraised it? Do you have paperwork? Big one. If you have paperwork, save the paperwork. You know, do you know why? No, but the grandma told us that she had it appraised and that's what the man told her. Okay. And it was somewhere in Ohio and I don't really know where, but that's what she always told us that this was worth and that if anything happened to her, you know, one of those stories. And, you know, and I'll say to them, look, you know, the popular work which gets higher values right now, the popular items are schoolgirl samplers. I'm happy to take this job and look into it, but I'm going to tell you right now that unless I can figure out something about it that made it extra special, you're going to be very disappointed, because if this is worth a couple $1,000s, you're going to be in good shape here. So, and they unfortunately get very unhappy, and I hate to disappoint people, but I'd rather tell them up front before I accept a job that, you know, you're not going to be happy after you pay me and you see your evaluation, and they'll huff and they'll puff. And every once in a while, it's funny, because then one of the other appraisers that, you know, that I've worked with in our program, all of a sudden someone will start asking around, well, has anyone spoken to this person? They said they spoke to another appraiser, or gee, someone will just contact me and say someone contacted me about this piece and I'm having a little trouble, and I'll say, oh, is it this, this, and this? And they'll say yes. I'll say, ah, yes. And they're gonna, right. And you know, and my associate will say to me, I'm about to tell them the same thing that you told them, but I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing anything, you know. So
right.
So that, yeah, unfortunately, that happens quite often. And you know, we hate to tell people that their pieces are not worth that, especially if there's nothing to back it up. So,
right.
It does happen.
Right. So, and that just goes to show, you know, what I would appraise, like, I have tons of Gay Ann Rogers hearts. What I would have those for insurance, if it, you know, we had a tornado come through here and they were destroyed. That would be totally different than what they would resale out. Most people look and say, oh yeah, that's probably worth about $25, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, I mean,
because they just don't understand the materials and the time put in. And exactly. And that's probably all, and that would probably be all the market would bear, to be honest.
Exactly. You know? And that's the difference between a sales valuation versus an insurance valuation,
right?
Because we're looking at having it possibly replaced, because you can't just go buy one off the shelf somewhere. So we would be looking at having someone, you know, the cost of how it would be replaced and what would be involved in that, versus you going to sell it and what would someone actually pay you for the piece. And it's interesting, because there are different values to things, and you wouldn't think that there would be, but there really are. When you start to think about it, it starts to make sense.
So the bottom line is, if you want to gauge, watch Antique Roadshow and count how many times people make a killing in an hour. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes Antique Roadshow is fun. Every once in a while we get surprised.
Right. But that's just it. Yeah. And that's also the fun part, but it's also very rare. Yeah.
It is. And also just Antique Roadshow, it's interesting, because my understanding, and it has to be this way, because even I watch it and go, okay, I know these people are experts and they can give some information off the top of their heads. But my understanding is those shows, there's a lot more research that goes on, and there's more time spent than just the person coming up in front of them. You know, I think a lot of people that probably go to those, you know, have items that the appraisers are expert enough that they know what the price range is and can tell them. But I think some of the pieces that they put on the air, especially ones that have a lot of background and history, like, oh, this was, you know, Grandpa's Civil War uniform, and there's a picture with it, and here's a letter from his wife before they got married, when they were sweethearts. And I think there's a lot more research that they have done, you know. So people, and the reason I bring that up is because sometimes people expect to contact an appraiser, and they'll contact me expecting me just to say, oh, yes, it's in this price range. And I can't do that. It takes a lot more time for me to give you even that basic information, because there has to be research done, versus me just giving you an off the cuff, you know, idea. It's like a sampler, you know, oh, the sampler is in fair condition. It could be worth, say, $800. Oh, no, wait a minute. It belongs to the whatever school, and these are rare. There's only 10 of them known. And oh my gosh, now we're talking how many thousands of dollars. So, you know, it people don't understand why I can't just say, oh, $50 to pay me and I'll give you a number. It's just, sadly, it's impossible to do.
I can't believe an hour long TV show isn't all, oh, I just can't believe that. I thought that was the
magic of television.
Are you crushed, Gary? Crushed?
I'm just destroyed. She just burst the giant bubble right there.
I'm just going to say that. I'm sorry, Gary. I'd pat you on the back.
I'm a wreck for the rest of the day. Oh, jeez. Yeah. Have you done museum work? Have you appraised things for museums and, you know, serious collectors?
I have. And I because of confidentiality clauses, I can't really discuss it.
No,
but, I was called in to consult on something that actually was a very big deal. Is really, unfortunately, all I can say about about it as much as I would like to talk about it. I can't, but yes, I have had a couple projects that I have worked with that were fabulous, and I can't tell you how thrilled I was to have been involved with them.
Yeah, well, that's why I asked, is it has to be very exciting to do that kind of work. Yeah,
it is. It is. It is. I can't, I'm afraid I can't elaborate.
That's all right.
On
no,
that.
That's no, don't expect you to.
But yeah, they do come up, and I love it, you know. Very interesting, and especially to get up close and personal with, you know, with certain things from certain people is a real treat that not everyone gets to do.
Right. Do you know of appraisers, or have you run across fakes that were considered to be the real deal?
I haven't run into that any more than someone perhaps sending me a picture of something that they've purchased and they think it could be vintage or antique. The person that they bought it from wasn't really sure. So they're looking to identify it and see, is it worth appraising? And sometimes I'll look and say, no, this actually type of work was done in, you know, like the 1970s. And I can see from the materials and the pattern and it's this design. You know, I'll take a couple minutes and a lot of times I can locate a design and say, hi, if you want to look up this title and, you know, this manufacturer, it was done as a kit in, you know, Europe. And, you know, so that nice gift that your mother was given or that you got at the collectibles store when you were traveling and they told you was special, you know, not so much. And again, I hate to be the bearer of bad news and I try to do it very nicely.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
You know, that's the thing with so much of this stuff. My aunt, when she died, had a massive collection of those Hummel figurine things, and gave them all to us. And immediately you think, oh man, these things are old, and how cool is this? And what a tremendous value of this collection. And you start to look them up, and they aren't even worth the original purchase price. And you know, you're kind of disappointed, but then again, it's not surprising. And so this whole world of what is this stuff worth, you know, stop and do some basic research, ask some basic questions, because your perception and your emotions need to be removed from it, and you need to connect with the real world. And that's where that's what I'm picking up from you, is you connect it to the real world.
Yes, I have to. And that was a great statement that you just made. Yes, you do have to be prepared to, you know, remove your emotional attachment, especially if it was a family piece. You have to be able to sort of separate yourself from it. These days in particular, a lot of people are looking for any resource to make a little extra money. You know, and it's just not everything is worth what you're hoping it to be worth. And sometimes they are, you know, sometimes things are worth looking at and having an appraisal done. I always like to consult with my potential clients first, and we'll either do a phone call or a back and forth on a bunch of emails with pictures. And, you know, I really like to get a lot of background and sort of get a feel for what it might be to give them an accurate range, first of all, of what the job will cost, you know, as to how much time it will take me. And I also will advise someone if they come to me with something that I really think is going to be worth less than $500. And I'll say to them, look, here's my rate. Here's what it would take for me to appraise it. I don't think that this is going to be worth enough to be worth the cost of paying me to do the appraisal for you to pay me. I'm happy to do it, but I think the appraisal is going to cost close to or more than the amount of the value. And I recommend that you perhaps not do it. And I've had a bunch of people that, you know, then they'll write back and say, thank you so much. You know, I agree with you. Thank you for explaining it to me. And, you know, and thank you for saying that, you know, it's not worth the cost of having it done. I appreciate you not taking advantage, you know. So I try to be honest and upfront with my potential clients.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the problem with all this is it's our heart and soul that goes into each stitch. And, you know, as the piece gets closer to finish, the value goes up. And then when it's framed, now it's really important. And, yeah, and it's, you have to be careful. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Cindy, as with the judging podcast, thanks so much. Boy, I learned a ton. I really appreciate the time.
Well, thank you again for having me back. Always nice to talk to you and Beth.
And thanks to everybody for listening.